Welcome to the Lancet Infectious Diseases Podcast. My name is Aaron Van Dorn, speaking to you from the Lancet's New York office. I spoke with Dr. Matthew Plachinski of the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta about the impact of the recent Ebola outbreak on treatment of malaria in Guinea. Could you describe what malaria prevalence was in Guinea before the Ebola outbreak and how the disease was managed?
So malaria is a leading cause of mortality and morbidity in Guinea, and it's actually the single largest cause of healthcare demand in the country. In 2012, we did a national survey that showed that around 44% of children under 5 actually had malaria parasites in their blood. However, in recent years, the Guinea National Malaria Control Program, together with its partners, have made significant progress in reducing that malaria mortality, primarily through expansion of access to life-saving antimalarials and the distribution of insecticide-treated bed nets for malaria prevention.
What prompted you and your collaborators to perform this study?
In mid to late 2014, the Guinea National Malaria Control Program began hearing reports of drastically falling patient attendance at health facilities that was coinciding with the Ebola epidemic. And we're also hearing reports of large-scale disruptions in malaria care delivery at the community level. This was particularly worrying for us because malaria care delivery at health facilities is one of the cornerstones of the success of malaria control in Guinea. As a result, the Guinea National Malaria Control Program, in a very proactive move, commissioned this study and actually sent teams into the field to confirm these anecdotal reports. And we wanted to investigate the causes of the reported changes in patient numbers, as well as quantify the extent to which the epidemic had disrupted malaria care delivery. So the data that we're actually publishing are from these visits to the health facilities.
And what tools did you use in your study to evaluate the changes in malaria care and management?
Study teams interviewed health facility workers in a random sample of health facilities, and we compared health facility records before and during the Ebola epidemic. At the same time, we also analyzed national surveillance data to look at trends in reported malaria cases nationwide. Surprisingly, these two very different approaches pretty much gave us the same results.
And what aspects of healthcare in Guinea did you find to be disrupted by the Ebola outbreak?
Our study is the first to document and quantify the extent of what we saw that were substantial and sudden drops in all-cause health facility attendance, fever cases presented to health facilities, and most importantly, malaria cases being treated at health facilities during the course of the Ebola epidemic. Now, although the reductions were observed throughout the country, the largest decreases were noted in adults in areas heavily affected by the Ebola epidemic, where we found a roughly 60% reduction in patients treated with antimalarials. We estimate that there are actually around 74,000 fewer suspect malaria cases reported in health facilities in 2014 since the start of the Ebola epidemic. Now, because patients that are ill with malaria are unlikely to get appropriate treatment outside health facilities, we believe that excess malaria deaths due to the Ebola epidemic almost certainly greatly exceed the number of deaths from Ebola virus disease itself.
Did you find that fear of being infected with Ebola virus was a crucial factor in reducing the cases of malaria seen in the Guinean health centers during the Ebola?
Data from our study, as well as other sources, do suggest that the Ebola epidemic in Guinea has resulted in a sort of crisis of confidence in the public health sector. So we are seeing that fear is causing ill people to no longer come to health facilities to receive the life-saving medications that are available there. I personally witnessed the distrust and fear of public health authorities in certain communities when I was part of the Ebola response in the forest region of Guinea way back at the beginning of the Ebola epidemic. And unfortunately, many of the same factors that have made Ebola control difficult in Guinea, such as lack of trust of authorities and community resistance, are also threatening to reverse the gains made by the malaria control effort in Guinea in recent years. However, it really should be noted that multiple other factors, in addition to fear, are in play, including health facility closures and changes in behavior on the part of healthcare workers as well.
Your study has data from the beginning of the Ebola epidemic until the end of 2014. Do you have any indication that the trends are continuing?
So unfortunately, reports from the field that we're getting are really confirming that the same trends that we observed in our study are still continuing. We've seen that patient attendance at public health facilities is still below expected, and we're finding malaria drugs that are sitting there unused. Now, as the peak malaria transmission period for this year is currently beginning, we really do think that action is needed to reverse the trend and get patients back to health facilities.
In your opinion, where should immediate interventions in healthcare organizations focus in the coming months to address the change in malaria case management?
The National Malaria Control Program in Guinea is part of a larger effort within the Ministry of Health that's aimed at pretty much relaunching the health system in Guinea. While the exact details of the relaunch are still being discussed, it likely involves strategies aimed at restoring confidence in the public health sector and also reconnecting health facilities with the communities they serve. Crucially, we do believe that community health workers will likely have a pivotal role in the effort.
What was the impact and changes in international guidelines for malaria testing and management during the Ebola outbreak due to your study?
In late 2014, the WHO released new malaria diagnosis and treatment guidelines that are specific to areas with Ebola transmission. And these guidelines allowed for presumptive antimalarial treatment of febrile cases in areas without appropriate personal protective equipment, such as gloves and protective eyewear. In our study, we actually found that presumptive treatment of febrile cases was lower since the start of the Ebola epidemic compared to the preceding year, which was contrary to expectations. However, we do believe that this was due to the expansion of access to malaria diagnostic tests in Guinea in 2014. In any case, our study was performed very soon after the adoption of the new guidelines in Guinea, so we can't really say what kind of effect the new WHO guidelines had.
Can you discuss a little bit about how your observations in the field line up with the model that was recently published in The Lancet Infectious Diseases?
So Dr. Walker and his colleagues used a mathematical model to estimate the effects of the Ebola epidemic on malaria morbidity and mortality.